Alcoholic. And I have the privilege of introducing the panel this morning and moderating it and giving a brief history of the responsibility statement. First, is there anybody who's really good with a 10-minute timer on their phone who wants to maybe come up and help me time? Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you. I'm too scatterbrained. I'd forget the timer like I usually do with hard-boiled eggs. I shouldn't say usually, always. They're burning in the bottom of the pan. The title of the workshop this morning is We Are Responsible. And the panel that you met last night is Karen. Magdalena, Andre, and Bob. And before we get started, I'm going to talk for just a few minutes about the history of the responsibility statement. And I looked this up on Google because I didn't really know where it came from. So anytime you don't know something, you just go to Google. The responsibility, and I'm going to read this because I don't know it. Very well. The responsibility statement was written for the 1965 AA International Convention in Toronto. And the statement was written by an AA trustee, Al S. And it reads, let's read this together. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I'm responsible. Bill W. was at that convention, and in his talk to over 10,000 people at one of the main speaker meetings, he talked about the responsibility statement. And he emphasized at that time, AA had been going for like 30 years, and he emphasized that we've reached at that point, less than 10% of the population of alcoholics that could have really benefited from the message of AA. 10% of those who might have been willing to approach us. And he indicated that many of them, of those people, hadn't been reached because they hadn't been hurt enough or because they were hurting too much. And many, due to complicating mental and emotional complications, so they weren't able. So he stressed the importance of cooperation at all times with all the agencies who work on the program of, who work with alcoholism. And in a Grapevine article in 1965, following the convention, he indicated that there were two major thoughts that stood out for him in the remarks that were made at the convention. And one was the incredible success of AA in helping to sober up so many alcoholics. Like, yahoo, isn't that wonderful? But he was also concerned that possibly because of the success, that there could be a feeling that you didn't have to work so hard or could become somewhat complacent. Since that time, there have been advisory actions from the General Service Conference affirming the responsibility statement, and basically also advising and recommending that the responsibility statement be left as it is worded here and that it not be changed. And it has not been changed since that convention. To keep this panel moving this morning, we've got a timer. Where are you, timer? Yay. Okay, we have a timer, and each member of the panel, and we'll see how this flies. Each member of the panel has been given a list of questions to look at before they speak today. And the questions are, I'll give it back. What does the AA responsibility statement mean to you personally? Why does the responsibility statement use the word I instead of we? How broad is the responsibility statement considering the term anyone and anywhere? Does the responsibility statement require that the alcoholic reach out to you before individual responsibility kicks in? And what if I, as an individual, am not in the right frame of mind to deal with a newcomer who reaches out? So each panel member has been asked to pick one or two questions from this list to address them in 10 minutes. And then we will open it up to questions from the audience. And I think it might flow best if each question, and I'm not sure about this either, maybe is addressed to a particular panel member. When you ask a question, you might say, I have a question to Andre, or I have a question to, you know, so it's addressed, so they're not sitting there going, okay, who's going to answer? I don't want to answer. And one person ends up taking all the, anyway, you know what I mean. Am I controlling? Okay. So we're going to try that. And so we are so prepared. So here we go, and first up on the panel is Father Bob, and if you can come up here, it's easier for the signers if you speak here, and then we'll do that. And so timer, after 10 minutes, you just kind of wave at them gently. Don't go, just, okay? Thanks.
Hi, my name's Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. I ran into the pledge about 8 weeks ago. It's in a frame on the wall in our meeting room, but I never particularly noticed it or paid any attention to it. And then Pat said, I'm going to get her in trouble now. Pat said to me, when you're doing the speaker panel, I'd like you to talk about the history of how we came to have the pledge.
Go ahead, it's okay.
Which she just did. Because, but she warned me ahead of time. Anyway, I looked it up and did some research on it and discovered it and realized that I really had never noticed it or thought about it. And so the part I wanted to respond to is, does the responsibility statement require that the alcoholic reach out to you before individual responsibility kicks in? No. So I think I'm supposed to expand on that. I think there's the risk, of course, that's implicit in this is that we're going to start telling people what they ought to do. Okay, and that's not what this is about. I've run into a couple of people who are close enough to me and personally connected enough that I can speak to them personally. And I can say the next day, boy, you were having a time last night. Or, how are you feeling this morning? Or something like that, which opens the possibility of a conversation. The thing that I find most helpful in these situations is to say something like, you know, I don't want to get in your face, but have you thought about how much you drink? And most of the time they say, yeah. You know, I mean, wasn't that true for you? Didn't you have a period of time in your life when you thought, yeah, maybe I'm overdoing it? Because that always comes before I can't stop. Maybe I'm overdoing it. Holy mackerel, I didn't mean to do that. I can't stop drinking. So it's not my business to tell someone that they're an alcoholic. It's my business to just give a little bit of something that maybe starts them thinking. If they are open to any kind of jabbing, the thing that I found most helpful is talking about the phenomenon of craving. And I just say, you know, one of the indications that there's a problem, and my understanding of the key element that makes alcoholics different from other people is this phenomenon of craving, that when you have a drink, you want another one. It doesn't mean that you can't stop at one drink, because lots of people can. They can have, for a long time in my life, I could have two or three drinks and stop. But I never, ever, ever stopped without wanting another one. I often tell the story about, you know, we'd be at a social or a party or something like that where there'd be an open bar, and around 10 o'clock or so, I'd say to my wife at the time, I'm going to get another drink. Can I get you something? And she would go, no. And I think, wow, she has a problem. And what I came to realize, of course, was that that issue was always there. I always wanted more. And so if I can plant that idea in someone's mind, then they start to think about it. You know, they have two or three drinks and they start to wonder whether they can stop. Not just can they stop, but do they recognize in their body that they've had enough? You know, I think that's one of the things about us, eh? Our bodies are different. It's not by mistake that we call non-alcoholics normies, eh? They have a normal reaction. When my wife was going, no, her body was saying to her, you've had enough of this poison, stop. My body never told me that. And if people can start to think, am I having that phenomenon of craving? Then maybe, just maybe, they'll begin to realize that they have more of a problem than they thought. So the issue for me is always that it doesn't require someone to come up to me and say, do you think I'm an alcoholic? The issue for me is to be sensitive enough and aware enough of people, friends, family, to be able to say something about it. If somebody hadn't said something about it to me, I might not be here today. So that's enough for me for now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for expanding on the no. That was good. So next we have Magdalena.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Magdalena, I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. And as you know, we don't have the responsibility statement. In 1974, our statement was created, was voted in the, excuse me. At the World Service Conference, and our statement says, our Al-Anon Declaration says, when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon always be there and let it begin with me. So how broad is a responsibility statement considering the term anyone, anywhere? I got into service really young in the program. I was 3 months in the program when I had this spiritual desire to fix the world, you know, by opening Al-Anon meetings, hoping my family will come, but they never did. Other people came, you know, and so I was just so busy that then I realized that there was a need for Al-Anon. It wasn't, the program was just not for adults. Kids needed to go, so I decided to start an Al-Anon meeting, anyone, anywhere, including kids. So I the requirements for Al-Anon members are age from 11 to 18, okay? But I didn't care. I knew kids were hurt, so I opened the meeting for everybody. And so kids around 8, 9 years old will come to the meetings, and it was just so emotional just to hear their pain and how much, and witness the change by using the 12 steps and 12 traditions of our wonderful, beautiful program. So one day I had 8 months in the program, and I attended a Spanish event, and they needed an Al-Anon speaker. And I, you know, they came and asked me if I would speak. And I said, well, I've only been in the program 8 months, so I don't think I have a lot to give. And I said, but that lady over there has 5 years, you know, 5 years. She's like a saint, right? She knows everything. And then, so I go ask her. And this guy went and asked her, and the lady said she had a headache. I'm like, oh, God, you know. So he came back to me and said, she has a headache. And I go, oh, my God. I thought in my head, she's going to get in so much trouble with her sponsor. And I thought everybody had a sponsor in Allen, and, you know, everybody worked the steps. I thought everybody did the same thing that I was guided by my beautiful sponsor. But no, that's not the case. And so I told the man, you know, I'll do my best. So I got up and I spoke. And my sponsor told me, Magdalena, it's okay if you don't have a lot of time. It's okay when they ask you to do anything in Allen, and you gotta be willing to do it, because that person might be the only opportunity in life that they hear about the program. So you just gotta do it. And so as I continue in my recovery, I love service. I'm a service junkie. Okay, I just love service. I was so grateful to, after I graduated from college, I went to my home group, and I had already done everything, coffee person, greeter, secretary, and I knew there was more, but I just, it's sometimes we're so comfortable. I know I was so comfortable doing service at the group level. I remember my husband told me one day, why is it when you go to meetings, you have the coffee pot, you have the books, you have cookies, you have all these things. And it's like, what is wrong with you? And I said, well, nobody else wants to do it, and we can't leave our stuff at the church. And so he said, when I go to the meeting, I grab my car keys and I go. But see, not everybody's different. We all have our level of commitment to this program. So anyways, I had done all that, and I went to my group, and I said, I need a group service. I need to do service in the program. So they said, we have a job for you. And they gave me the grand honor to be the group representative. And what I did, I voted on matters that will help others in the state and in the world of Al-Anon. And so I became the group rep, and I continue to do service when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. And so I, you know, being bilingual, Spanish, there's some little towns in Eastern Washington that they have, at that time, they didn't have any Al-Anon meetings. And a lot of the large community are farm workers. And it just broke my heart that there's so much alcoholism in the Latino community and no Al-Anon. So one of them, you know, one day this person asked me, can you come and help? And I go, oh my God, it's 3 hours. But anyone, anywhere. If I have a car today, it's because the program and the God of my understanding. If I have food to eat and gas for my car, it's because the program. I do things different today. So anyone, anywhere. So I started driving 3 hours one way to reach out to this community. And until they, you know, and I made a commitment of 6 months. So for 6 months, I was driving over. And one day, and the great thing that we have in our program is that we never have to do it alone, okay? Even though nobody wanted to come with me, I went by myself, but I had all of you, and I had a, and in Al-Anon, and I think in AA, they do the same thing. They have a service sponsor. It is suggested that we don't only have a program sponsor, but a service sponsor. So I had a service sponsor. And one day, it was a beautiful day in Seattle. We have a jet ski, and you know, family was out in the water boating, and here I am driving to Yakima on a hot, beautiful day. And then I thought, am I crazy? You know, so I called my service sponsor, I go, am I crazy? And she said, well, you're probably as crazy as I am, you know, because I take meetings to the prison and nobody comes with me. And sometimes it's a beautiful day, sometimes it's a snowy day, but when anyone, anywhere. And that satisfaction, that gives that we get back, you know, that one day that I had 8 months in the program has led me to meet so many beautiful people all over the US and some in Canada, because when anyone, anywhere. You know, I have to put my fears on the side, because if the group conscience, you know, has chosen me or any of us, you know, to be present, is because God is in the group conscience. So who am I to deny God in the group conscience? So I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, whether it's in a meeting where there's five people, whether it's a meeting 3 hours that I have to drive, or whether it's a meeting across the country. You know, I have been given a gift of the program, and I'm just gonna give it away, because it's you know, it's I've been gifted. Why not give it away? You know, why not give it away? So later on in my recovery, I became the district representative, and which is well, many of you guys are familiar, but it's the district representative, and I would go visit groups, all the groups in within my district, and I will encourage people to participate, and I will do assemblies or workshops, and I will tell them, you know, we really need you to participate. I think you will be really wonderful if you became the group rep, or you will be really wonderful if you are the leader of this workshop, or you know, is we gotta make the program attractive. If I go to a meeting and I go, oh, well, nobody wants to do anything. Depending on my attitude, this program is attractive. I was just telling him that he's so attractive. He makes the program very attractive. So anyways, that's how we help one another. It was, you know, nobody ever came in, other than the program, nobody ever came in, told me, I think you will do really good if you became a group representative. You know, other than the program, and that's because, you know, nobody ever thought that I will be able to share, give something to share, if it wasn't because the man that had, you know, that asked me to speak. So we got to invite others. And so later on, as I continued in my service, I became the delegate, and I represented my state at the World Service Conference. And it was such a great honor. We're not only in our group, in our area, it's so big. And the votes that we take at the conference changes the world. Like one of them that I had the great honor to vote on was having a purchasing the building of the where Al-Anon is sitting today at the Virginia Beach. And you know, it's really hard to get somebody to rent a facility when we don't have a steady income. You know, we depend on donations. So it's like, how are you gonna pay the rent? It's like, well, we're gonna trust God, you know, that he's gonna provide. And that doesn't go well with a lot of landlords. So anyways, my time is up. Thank you so much.
I'm talked out, man.
Hi, I'm Andre Mingo, still an alcoholic and addict. AKA Good Day Dre. I never have a bad day. I want to apologize to the people who could not hear me last night because I'm a roamer when I talk. So when I turn this way, you couldn't hear. But they will rectify that in the future, I'm sure, for people who like to roam. They sit there and talk about responsibility. You know, I mentioned when I came up, I said, didn't I talk enough about responsibility last night? What more do you want from me? You know, you're draining me, you know. So I looked at these questions and they said, pick one or two of them out. I was saying, I could talk on all of them. When I came in the beginning, you talk about responsibility. I had no idea what that was. Be responsible. You're lucky I came through the doors. You're lucky I'm still sitting in a chair. Lucky that I'm still trying to listen to stuff that I don't understand what anybody was talking about. So I was trying to be responsible to myself before anybody else, because if I wasn't responsible for myself, there would be nobody else. I see the world in a different vision than a lot of other people. I'm blessed with having a higher power in my life, man, that scared me to death to bring me in here, to stay here. And he was responsible for my recovery. I was told in the beginning that I have to sit here and give things to other people. You can't keep it, not unless you give it away. And I see here it says, what if an individual, and not in the right frame of mind to deal with the newcomer who reaches out? Sometimes I don't want to talk to these new guys, man. See, because I'm too important today. I have too much time. I don't want to give you anything. I want you to learn it the way I learned it. And when I was trying to learn it that way, it didn't work. But I was told that I'm supposed to open my heart and just extend my hand and say, thank you for coming in. You never have to feel this way again. Have a seat. Give them a cup of coffee. And just say, relax. Everything you hear today, you don't have to accept it all. Just come back tomorrow. Here's my phone number. If you have problems tonight, call me. I don't have all the answers, but what I could do, I could guide you. That's part of being responsible. It's just guiding somebody as I was guided when I came in. And it said the broad responsibility statement, anyone, anywhere. That means anyone, anywhere. And one of the problems I have when they talk about when somebody reaches out for help, some don't know how to reach out for help. What do? Leave them alone? Because they don't know how to say, help me. And you know they're hurting, you're supposed to just leave them alone and say, well, they didn't ask. It doesn't work that way. I was so hurt and so beat up that, you know, I didn't know how to say, could you help me? Matter of fact, my arrogance and sarcasm, my ego was so big that I wouldn't dare ask you for help because it made me feel real small until they taught me what help actually was. So sometimes I have to little bits and pieces out to people. and hope they hear that little bit, that they won't be as vulnerable, and they come in and say, yeah, can you do me a favor? Like when that man last night, when my sponsor, the first one, the way he helped me as far as responsibility, when he said to me, what's your problem? And I cried like a baby because that opened the door for me to say I needed help. I was making believe I was asking for help by saying I want to go to a meeting, which I really didn't want to go to a meeting. But when he said, what's your problem? And I cried like a baby, he knew I was asking for help. And when I said, no, I need you right now, he knew I was begging, and he came. Sometimes it takes that. Can't force any alcoholic to do anything he does not want to do. Can't do it. And if you try and push it on them, they'll step further away. My goal in here is not to push people away. It's to help them try and find a seat in the chair that they're comfortable with. One of the things I did not mention last night were my uh-oh moments, and I have to tell you this one for my uh-oh moments, man. I was sitting around in a chair in a room, and this is important. Walking around, want to sit down, and I'm all confused, don't know where I want to sit down. I went down, I went to sit in a chair, and between the chair, my initials were carved in that chair, AFM. That was an uh-oh moment. My higher power is responsible for having that carved in that chair, for me to sit in that chair, and for me to stay there. So not only is people in the rooms responsible, my higher power is more responsible that can guide us in order to see the people that we need to see. It's not as difficult as people think it is because, you know, we love the complicated aspect of life. I love it, man. I like chaos. Chaos always got me in trouble that I always had to ask for help. And I still don't like to ask for help. You know, people come to me and say, Andre, are you okay? And I say, yes, and they lie. You say, lying to me. You know, some people come to me and they said, Andre, are you okay? I said, yes. They said, no, you're not. I said, what are you talking about? They said, I haven't heard you say good day, Dre, in a long time. What's up? He broke me. Even though I'm around a long time, I still don't want to be truthful sometimes. And I need the help from other people so they are responsible to me as I'm supposed to be responsible to them. This is a twofold situation. I don't give, they don't give. If I'm selfish, they're going to be selfish. Or if I'm selfish, they don't know what I need to help me. Because sometimes I just don't want to tell you. I can fix it on my own. Doing stuff like that is not being responsible. It says, does a responsibility statement kick in to reach out before an individual responsibility kicks in? No, man. I deal with my own responsibility first. Otherwise, I can't give it to you because I have no idea what I'm doing. So how can I give it to something to you when I don't know what I'm doing? That, to me, that just does not make any sense. You know, I had to learn it. I had to be taught, browbeated with these old timers in here. They're the ones that had to teach me about what responsibility is. You know, when I came in, I talked about the steps, how I knew what the steps were, you know, because I was so smart. And the responsibility is to read between those lines, not just these words that are sitting here. Words are one thing, but the feeling and the inspiration that one might get is something totally different. That's part of being responsible. Standing up here, who knew? I'm out of my comfort zone. Being responsible is getting out of your comfort zone, moving into something else to try and help somebody else. Then you might become uncomfortable. That's the whole process of being in these rooms, to learn how to become comfortable with yourself by helping other people. You know, if I had to do it all over again, I'd do it the same way. I have no regrets. And when I have no regrets, that makes me more responsible because I know what should be done and how it should be done, and I can't backtrack. And I'm sure I'm cut short. How much time do I have? I hope I have like no time left here.
2.5 minutes.
Oh. Oh, man, you know, I'm sitting here. I have to laugh. I laugh a lot. You know, life is great. You know, I talked to my sponsor, and my sponsor is a very responsible individual. I said, thank you for teaching me what I learned for doing last night. And he came back, he said he didn't do it, God did it. My sponsor took no credit for what he's taught me. I take no credit. I show up today, I hope somebody heard something. If you didn't, keep listening because you will end up hearing it. And that's how it works in here. And the more I talk, the more responsible I am for certain individuals. Some may not like what I say, but you know, it doesn't matter. Somebody else will say something that you like, and as long as they sit in the chair, it's okay. My goal is to make sure you stay in your chair, that you have some sort of hope, that despair gets pushed away, to lighten your load. That's the most important thing. Not to be scared when you come in here. And don't think this is a bunch of in a cult with all these crazy people, as I thought when I came in. I thought all of you were out of your minds. And then I realized I'm out of my mind. And I used to question, and an old-timer said to me, I said, I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic or not. It's my desire left me. And part of their responsibility, thoughts that they had, and they said to me, then why do you keep coming into a room full of alcoholics just to listen to people? What kind of answer did I have for that? If I wasn't sure, I was sure, but I did not want to release it to let you know that I wanted. So I'm still asking for help and didn't still know how to ask for help. That is one of the hardest things to do. So the newcomer, anybody that's new, or anybody that's not sure, feel free just to put your hand out and ask somebody, humble yourself and say, could you help me? Can I get your phone number? That's help. Me giving you a phone number, half the people I give phone numbers to, they never call me. But I give them the phone number anyway. And then sometimes when they call me, I had one guy call me up, and I said, who's this? And then I remembered you, the guy, the construction guy that was sitting next to me one day, that you just came in and we were talking. And this is like 8 months later, and I'm getting picture. Chris, yes. And we started talking. I text him every morning now. He has 8 years now. All because I gave him a phone number. If that's not being responsible, nothing is. I thank you.
I'm going to stand here. Can everyone see me okay? Darn it. Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name's Karen. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a double winner. I'm a member of Al-Anon as well. I'm going to begin with I'm responsible, right? My question is, what is my personal feeling about the responsibility statement? And it's really personal for me. Part of that question includes, who is missing from the room? Who's missing? Look around here. Who is not here? That's who we're responsible for. When I came into AA a long time ago, I was terrified because I was the only deaf person in that room. And even though people were loving to me, they welcomed me, they were smiling and friendly, I felt I was at a loss. I don't fit here. This is not designed for me. I knew I had to make it work for me. Like Andre said, responsibility for myself as well. So, So I heard the responsibility statement, and I got it right away. It hit me. And that's the message that I'm supposed to get. That's what I'm supposed to hear and carry. That was powerful. That hit me. That was one of the most impactful things I heard. So I didn't know where to start. I had to start with becoming my own advocate for access. The responsibility statement, I think long ago, and Bill W. wrote it, and Bill W. was amazing, brilliant man. He, visionary. And I really liked when Pat described that AA was becoming a little bit full of itself, like we don't have any work we have to do, we're all done. We have, think about that in terms of what's happening right now. Maybe that problem might be coming back a little bit. It's a good question to ask. Are we all done? AA's good, we're fine. No, we have a lot more work to do and ongoing. Being responsibility for the newcomer, being responsible for reaching out, we're also responsible for who's missing in the rooms. That's part of the theme of this weekend, is diversity. What's out there? People who feel a little hesitant, not like they can't join, like all white men, Christian, religious, hearing, on and on, can be a little overwhelming. But it's a beautiful program. It works. We know it works. So how do we make it more friendly? So I started just by working on myself first, because I had to have the foundation and the understanding of how this program runs and operates. And I got a sponsor, and she is... She had never worked with a deaf person before. I'm going to talk more about that later on tonight, but I don't want to spoil it. The end. The point is that I had to teach. I had to teach my sponsor equal, just as much as she taught me. It was a two-way street. And she didn't know any deaf people. She thought that if she yelled at me, raised Karen. Nope, didn't work. That's not how it works. And because I can't hear your voice. Oh. So she turned, you can turn your voice off. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing for me. Because she's a very loud person in general, but anyway. She said things like, AA can't afford to provide interpreters for you. And I was like, we have to make it work. We have to make it work somehow. Everyone puts a dollar in the hat all the time. There must be millions of dollars out there somewhere. We just have to find a way to make it work. Well, she was... It's not a part of the budget. What are you talking about? Oh, the pie. What do you mean the pie? So then I got involved with and figure out what the pie is. So printing out bulletins, the big book. But you can't provide an interpreter here? Okay. We can make this work. I know we can. So step by step. I decided my own personal perspective of responsibility was action and getting involved. I did a lot of what Magdalena talked about. My home area is in the mountains, rural farmland. All the meetings were pretty far away. Deaf people are isolated in remote distances. It's pretty hard. When we have big conferences, roundups or something, then we have to drive 2 hours. So I would drive and go pick up one person, that guy in North Adams, in about an hour and a half away, and then drive another to Northampton, pick up another person, another woman, and then drive south to Southfield, Springfield, and drive all around. A long time ago, that's what alcoholics did too. I think that's kind of cool. We're so spoiled right now because we have meetings less than half an hour away. If it's more than half an hour, you think, oh, that's too far. It's crazy. That makes me feel involved, like I'm doing the right thing. That's my responsibility. Then I got involved with access committees. I'm the first deaf person that ever was on a Massachusetts access committee, just me. Again, they had a blind person before and a person in a wheelchair, but they had never had a deaf person before. So I got an interpreter, figured all that out. Then, oh, this is a new experience. And I went on to explain that the message, how we carry the message and spread the message without language, there is, and access, there is no message. You said, well, deaf people all lip read, right? Nope. We don't all lip read. It's actually really hard to lip read. I told my sponsor to try it out herself. She told me I was being funny, but So I did a lot of teaching and a lot of educating, very gently, mind you, and lovingly. Because angry people don't win. They don't make friends. And I've seen a lot of really angry deaf people at the really angry at the oppression they felt from the hearing world. Just full of rage. And I get it. I really get it. I don't like being ignored. I don't like being excluded, being told it's too bad. Even my home group. I went to my home group and they said, we have to figure out how to provide an interpreter. And they said, sorry, there's not enough of you. We need more deaf people. And I don't mean to preach, but we're doing really well right now. If you compare the numbers, 1 out of 1,000 people are deaf. 1 out of 1,000 people are culturally deaf. And I don't know how many people are here. I think there's about 1,000 people here. And we have 8 deaf people here. We're beating the numbers right now. We're doing really really well. We're doing really well. So this is good representation. So let's backtrack a little. When you become involved, AA has the structure. You can become involved, it's there, and you can make a difference. You can include and involve the people that are missing and get them to come, because we are responsible for that. And I am responsible for that. I noticed that Pat said, we are responsible, but the pledge actually says, I am responsible. So I think it's a little bit of both. So I'm gonna stop. You guys have been wonderful, very patient, listening to everyone. All of my keynote speakers are amazing. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be here.
Thank you, guys. Is there somebody who will run the mic around for questions? Thank you. She's a yogi. She's fit. 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Go. She only had 20 this morning. I know it's early, but thanks. And you know, I just want to say, I want to give a hand of applause. And Via, come stand up for a minute. You know, I was crying during that, and I'm going to tell you why. As the chairperson for this convention this year, even among our own committee, we're spending $4,000 on two interpreters. Really? Do you know how much that is per person? Do you figure it out? It's a tough situation. Via fought for this, Via. And once again, I'm so proud of the diversity of this panel. So, and that the committee went along and that we're here. And there's suggestion boxes. There's one, Jason made a suggestion box. And there's little forms. And maybe what you could do is, if you agree that we should continue to provide this service, write a note and put it in the box, because it's a chunk. We have two volunteer interpreters here this weekend. And that's awesome. And wow, thank you. And the woman who just spoke for Karen was her daughter, Bonnie. So anyway, so what we're going to do now is open it up to questions, and once again, we will end on time. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sheree, I'm an alcoholic. I was crying too when you spoke or signed, because my mother was a deaf alcoholic, and her excuse was that she couldn't hear anybody because she never learned sign. And she didn't go to meetings anymore. So my question to you is, did you find people who didn't know sign walk away from AA because they couldn't hear people?
That's right. That's exactly right. I've seen that happen, especially as you've become older. Believe it or not, we have the technology that can fix that. It also costs money. Okay. There's something that's called cartography, or CART. In Massachusetts, where I live, all of the conventions and roundups have CART. It's like a real-time captioning system. So it's like on a screen in the back, and someone's just typing along, and it pops up. And so you can read everything. And you know that 160 people wrote on the evaluation people that they watched the CART because there's a lot of hard of hearing people or people losing their hearing in AA. So yeah, we can keep it. We can make that happen, and we can keep those people. But they will leave if they can't hear. That's exactly right.
Rod alcoholic. So our anonymity part about taking video or pictures in AA, like what about the individuals, the eight people here? Can I video that? Because I got an uncle and her, and an elderly uncle, deaf, alcoholic, and a daughter, same way, you know, and they're in Calgary, and there's nothing. And I wonder if I could just even take like a 5-minute video while you're signing to give it some personal. I mean, because I've sent them brochures, I've sent them stuff. I'm from BC, so our area does a lot of accessibility work, trying to do more. Anyways, that's my question.
And I personally support that. We don't have any videos of the speakers. They make recordings. So I can't buy the DVD recordings of the speakers. I have to buy the voice, and then I have to ask a friend of mine or interpreter, do you mind interpreting that for me? Another thing we can do is request a transcript, a written transcript. That might be a good idea. Not only voice recordings, but actually typed out and distributed to people who are losing their hearing so they can read it as well. But a lot of deaf don't read English very well, so the signing is better. I've actually asked my daughter to record me tonight because I want deaf people to be able to see me present. So I support that. That's a great idea.
Hi, I'm Heidi. I'm an alcoholic. Just kind of an addendum to that. I'm from Minnesota, and my home group, we have a lot of interpreted meetings where I'm from. And one of them, actually two of them, record the interpreters, because obviously you can't record the AA member sharing their story. But the camera is always on the interpreter, so, and that is available to anyone. We can email that to people, so if there are any deaf or hard of hearing people here who would like to be able to access those speakers, we could get you on that emailing list so that you could, and that can go to of course, to anyone, because again, the interpreters are not alcoholics, and so they can be recorded and you can share that with anyone. So see me, Heidi, if you would like to get be part of that emailing list.
What did you say? What did you say? No, I can't sign. I have hearing aids, which pooped out on me a week ago, and I didn't have the money to buy new ones before the conference. I have a hearing deficit. It's upper register. I lose all the consonants. P, t, d. Those kind of sounds. So all I hear is ow, ow, ow. Okay? So one of the things you can do is just use your tongue. Okay? Just concentrate on articulating your words. It helps humongously. Okay? And I really didn't hear what you said, but it sounded important.
So my home group has interpreters, uh-huh. And we video the interpreters.
Okay.
So that can be spread out. We have an email
okay.
list, so if people
yeah.
wanted to be included on the emailing list.
Right.
They can see the
okay.
interpreters.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Alcoholic. This for Andre. Last night I thought you brought a great point up. I've been in AA a long time, and I remember once I kind of what how I understood AA came to me. One day I'm watching this beautiful red Mustang convertible, 5-liter, unbelievable. And on the back is a sticker that says, get in, shut up, and hang on. And that kind of epitomized, you know, when I came in, because I had a sponsor, not nice. And, you know, I've always said, you kind of got to respect and fear your sponsor a bit, just because, you know what, we're defiant. And last night you kind of hit on it when you said, now it's a new kind of people that are coming in, kind of entitled, and I want to do it my way. And so this fella said to me, I want to do the steps with you. I said, have you done them? Yeah, I did them once a couple of years ago. And so I said, okay, well, let's put pen to paper. And he says, I don't do pen and paper. And I said, well, talk to me. What's it about? Can you read? Can you write? Yeah, but I don't like it. So I kind of explained a bit about it, and then he got it. We were doing the steps, and he said, you know what? This pen to paper stuff, it's good. You know, and so, and last night you hit on it, right? Are we afraid to kind of, you know, talk to them? Tell them the truth, right? Because, wow, it's different now, huh?
Yeah.
So I just, your thoughts.
Thank you. Back in the day, the sponsors didn't know how to deal with each individual. Because I used to catch the attitude with the way some of the sponsors were talking to their sponsees, like, who are they? But I didn't know the sponsee's background. I'm sitting here minding somebody else's business instead of minding my own. And I wasn't even sure how to mind my own business. So little things that we say, I've heard the line so many times, man. Get in the car, sit down, shut up. You know, keep it simple, stupid. And an emphasis on stupid. And I'm catching an attitude of resentment, but it was all part of the process of changing and learning how to adjust. I had one sponsor, my first sponsor, the one I talked about, he packed up and went to God knows where he moved to and left me hanging. I don't know where, he just disappeared. I got another one, the second one. He was arrogant and sarcastic and he beat me up all the time. And I'm catching the attitude. But I realized what he was doing. He was trying to teach me for when I have to deal with the real world. If I couldn't handle what he was doing, I'm not going to make it out there. And then my third and last sponsor here, he was so spiritually strong, you know, I needed to hit another level. So I got bits and pieces of what I needed. But to sit down, shut up, it hurt because I was so sensitive. But it made the most sense in the world just to shut up because I knew nothing and I tried to make believe I knew something. Thank you for your question.
Bob, alcoholic. Thanks. If anybody wanted to expand on the I and we idea.
Bob, me? What did he say? You wanted to expand on the
sorry,
I and we.
I didn't make that out. What was it?
The I and we idea.
Oh. Yeah. Well, if we're going to be responsibility, I have to be responsible. I think, you know, we can put it off on the program, we can put it off on the committee, we can put it off on anybody. But ultimately, I have to take action at some level. Okay, now that doesn't mean I have to be on the committees. Okay, I've been on a lot of committees in my life. I'm retired. I don't want to be on any more committees. Seriously, I don't want to be on any more committees. That doesn't give me life anymore. Used to at one time, but it doesn't anymore. But that doesn't relieve me from responsibility to making sure that there are resources available for those committees to do their work. You know, it's that kind of not necessarily direct responsibility, but the second level responsibility. Clearly, every one of us are responsible if anyone reaches out. You know, what the thing that really amuses me is that nobody has dealt with number five. What if I, as an individual, am not in the right frame of mind to deal with a newcomer who reaches out? I'm never in the right frame of mind. You know, I'm way too self-interested to be in the right frame of mind for someone to impose on my time. So we have to be prepared to set ourselves aside when something like that happens, right? It's preparing ourselves. It's that whole thing of taking care of ourselves so that we can be ready when the moment arises. And yes, I think it's always a matter of I. But that I has to be subsumed when we become a committee, because the committees are critical. Bless you, Pat. Bless you, Via. Bless all you people who have gone to all the work of putting this thing together. No one person could have done that. But if each one of those individuals had not taken the responsibility for their part, it would not have happened either. That's what a committee is all about. So that's enough. I'll go on a lot about these things. So.
Thank you. So my name is Michel Mlakolik. I really like what Karen said at the beginning when she mentioned that what do we do for the people who are not here yet? Because, you know, for us, we know it works. We're nice and cozy, you know, we overcame what we had to overcome to work our program, but what do we do to remove any obstacles for people to come in the program? Because I'm from Canada, and if you go to meetings, they're not representative of the diversity of the population out there. So it's pretty white cut cookie, you know, people my age, my looks. And so what do we do for racialized members of the community? What do we do for gays and lesbians? We make it easier a bit, but I mean, we have a lot to do. I think AA as a whole, you know, we've hit our peak in terms of numbers back in the mid-90s. So since then, we haven't grown. The population has grown, but we haven't grown. So, and I see in the rooms, wherever I go, I don't see diversity. So I think we need to question ourselves, what do we do for the people, like Karen said, who are not here yet? And, you know, I always tell people that if I don't grow in AA, if I don't change, I'm going to regress. Well, AA can't stay the same as it was in 1935 because society has changed since then. And I just need, we can do it. We don't have to, you know, make another AA. We can do what we need to do within AA. So I'd like to hear from Karen what her thoughts are on that.
I read a lot of really wonderful books and conferences that Bill W. wrote. It's called Our Great Responsibility. And I recommend that you read that because Bill W. did think about the future. He saw that issue. He saw that happening. And he warned us against it. We will regress. We will lose numbers. We will lose AA if we don't keep changing and growing. Bill W. said, there are alternate paths to recovery. And that's becoming pretty apparent right now. People are choosing other ways to become sober, and AA membership has flatlined and is kind of going down a little bit. For me, I agree. I think we have a beautiful structure. The problem is people. I've gone to conferences where people have flown in from all over and talked about what's happening in AA, and they vote. And I don't know how many times they voted no for changing the big book or making it a little bit easier to read. Or updating the language a little bit so it's not quite so male-centric or Christian-centric. People say, no, we don't change it. We don't touch that, so leave it. And I don't think Bill W. intended it to be that way. The more I read about Bill W., the more I realize that he was a visionary. He had a vision. He knew that we were gonna have to roll with the times. So it just means that your heart and your mind are free. Just open them both and let God in, or your higher power, or whatever you want to call it, and let it in, internalize it, and then go. Don't let fear stop you. People are afraid of change. The first time I did service work, because my sponsor told me that I had to do home group service work. So the first thing I did is I changed the seats. They were originally set up in rows like this, and that's not deaf-friendly. Deaf people typically sit in circles. So what I did is I set up the chairs in circles, and people freaked out. They lost it. Who changed the chairs? They got so mad. I was like, what's wrong with you people? So we can see each other this way. We can look in each other's faces. So just little things like that. I had to fight. And they did not keep it. They went back to the rows. Because that's how we do it. So that kind of thing. Thank you for your time.
I'm Jason, I'm an alcoholic. This is more of a comment and thing that this is such a great conference because of the diversity, and I think for the question of how does this get more diverse, it's conferences like this and women like Pat and Via who fight to make it more diverse. Because for me, there's an issue I had with each one of these people, their story that I can't use as a reason to use again, because it's been explained to me and now I understand it. And I'm just so thankful. And the diversity, and you're amazing. I know you're amazing. I've known you for a while, amazing. Magdalena's amazing, Latina woman. I was the white boy in all Latino treatment. And you just go without saying. And I mean, you can't have more diversity. And that, for me, is how this program's going to grow more. And Via's amazing. She's a tough little, there's a lot fit in that little thing. And anyway, that's all I have to say, so thanks.
Somebody must have a question for Magdalena.
I have one.
So Magdalena, so regarding the deaf community in Al-Anon, can you tell me how that's working? We've heard AA.
Yeah, unfortunately we haven't got anybody, but we do have interpreters available. They're just, the need has not been there yet. At least in the meetings that I go to, I haven't seen a need. But yeah, there are several members in our fellowship that are willing to translate. We have a list on the Al-Anon Intergroup office that, you know, for Spanish, Japanese, and sign language. But we do have them available when anyone, anywhere, right? So thank you.
At conferences as well?
I mean, at the area,
conventions or assemblies?
But at the assemblies, we just have the translating equipment, but nobody has approached us about sign language. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we do have the translation equipment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I thought that was a really good panel. And tonight's voice interpreter for Karen will be recorded. So that will be on the speaker recording. The voice interpreter for Karen will be recorded. Okay. I don't know. Our audio visual guys are in the back. Is there, we'll talk about, I don't know if it's possible at this late notice, but it's something to keep in mind for next year, because hopefully you're gonna put something in the suggestion box, and next year the committee will want this again. So you do that, and we'll talk about that for next year. So one important announcement, and that is that there's a tax here in Mexico of 16% on our hotel bill here for the venue that can be avoided if you bring your passport and your tourist card and we copy it. If we have a large enough percentage of people who do that, we will avoid that tax. And maybe if we avoid that tax, we'll have more money for interpreters next year. So please do that. Get your passport and your tourist card and take it. And we want to have a rush on the copiers. So if you're staying here, you can go to your room and get it. If you're not, please bring it back tonight or tomorrow, and we can copy it. We need to have a certain number. Visit the merchandise tables. This afternoon at 1 o'clock, we hear from Magdalena, so let's show up for our Al-Anon speaker. And please, once again, always remember to wear your lanyard when you're here. And now let's close first with the responsibility statement. We'll say that together, and then we'll join hands for the serenity prayer. So first, responsibility statement.